Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, a podcast for and about trial lawyers. We tell the stories about trial lawyers who go to battle every day in courtrooms throughout the United States for injury victims. This is about their stories and their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Synergy allows trial lawyers to focus on what they do best by handling the difficult issues that arise in settlement, like troublesome lien resolution issues, Medicare secondary payer compliance, government benefit preservation techniques, and complex settlement consulting. Without further delay, here's another episode of Trial Lawyer View with Philip Fearley.
Welcome to a special episode of Trial Lawyer View. Joining me today is Philip Fearley, seasoned entrepreneur and the president of Rainmaker Institute. With a remarkable career spanning tech startups, data-oriented legal marketing, and business intelligence tools, Philip brings a wealth of expertise to the conversation. His passion for helping law firms thrive in a competitive landscape is palpable, and his innovative solutions, including Rainalytics, have revolutionized the way legal practices approach marketing. In today's special episode, we're going to talk about his insights on law firm growth and the evolving intersection of technology and legal marketing in the digital age. Philip, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Thank you for joining me today.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Jason. It's been nice to meet you, and I'm looking forward to it.
So in doing my prep for the episode today, I looked at your career journey from tech startups to leading now the Rainmaker Institute. It's a very interesting background. Can you share the top five key lessons from your entrepreneurial experiences that have informed your approach now to the legal space?
Oh, that's five of them. Okay.
Or three, whatever comes to mind.
It has been an interesting journey, and I believe everybody probably has about three careers in their life or three big changes, some more. I had that by the time I was like 24. But really it started with my upbringing, because I grew up on a dirt road, a family of those five of us on a dirt road in Maine, 22 miles from the closest town. I kid you not. And I got a bug like, hey, there's got to be something better. And so that drove me, right? When you're hungry, my shoes weren't made out of tires, and we were full, but we were very meager, but that really drove me. So a couple of the things that I wish I would have known, I guess a good way to pose this is, what would I tell my 20-year-old self when I had graduated from college early, why I should not instantly think I can do it better than anyone else and start my own business? Like, advice I would maybe give my earlier self. I think making bigger decisions quicker. When I was owning my first tech firm in Chicago, it was a technology firm, and I got a proposal for a website. And this was like a $1,500 website, Jason. Remember the good old days? Right. And I think it took me like 6 months to make that decision, maybe 5 months to pull the trigger on a $1,500 a website, like getting a presence on the internet. As a business owner, you can't take 6 months to make a $1,500 decision, because you've got five other decisions that are piling up on your desk. So you have to be informed. I don't mean making snap decisions, but you can't drag your feet, because you have other things you have to address. So I made a lot of decisions slow in my business, kept employees too long, kept vendors too long, did things because it was the way it was done for too long. And that's why my best education was learning from my failures. So you got to learn from your failures. Don't take it personal. And that's real hard. That's probably number two. And that's pretty standard, what everybody would say. But you can't expect to open up a thriving business at the age of 25 unless you're a rare oddity. I'm not saying go work for big law, but you need a mentor, and you're going to make mistakes. And the third lesson is, get to know what ramen noodles taste like when you're bootstrapping a company. But ultimately, I think the biggest thing that's changed the trajectory of every business when I started doing it is a mantra that I say this a lot. What gets measured gets managed. You've got to track your data. And you've got to look at your data at least once a month and interpret the story. And then you just follow along. It's like it tells you what to do. Like, I'm not saying make radical changes month over month. Give things 2-3 months to percolate. But you've got to understand where your profit is, where your leads are coming from, like how they're... So what gets measured gets managed. I'm not talking rocket science data. Basic P&L, basic sales numbers, and ROI for those things. That was a game changer. When I did that, it future-proofed any business that I wanted to get involved with.
Yeah, great advice. So critical. We really are very religious about our data and about how we view it, both on a monthly basis and a quarterly, and some of it on a weekly basis, depending on what those KPIs are. So, from looking at...
Can I give you a little practical
story? Yeah.
This will take like 4 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is how you can practically, for a law firm, how you can practically implement and interpret the story with data. So there was this law firm, I believe they're in Fort Worth. They had 4 attorneys. I believe they were personal injury. They may have been criminal defense. I can't remember. I think they were criminal defense. So they round robin their consultations, right? The intake would take the call. They would set up the sales consultation. And if you're in the office and you're available on your calendar, you're up next, right? Probably pretty typical in a law firm of that size. And then we implemented a tool we developed for our clients called Rainalytics, and pun on Rainmaker and analytics, but it tracks the basic data that you need to run your law firm. So we found out that there was the 4 attorneys that were taking consults, there was 3 of them that were closing essentially at about 20%. And then their newest attorney, and I remember her name, Michelle, if she's not the owner of that firm, she started her own because she was a rainmaker. She was out of law school for about a year and a half, and she was closing at about 68%. Don't quote me on it. But they were just still round robining and wondering why they weren't closing enough deals. So you know what I told them? Stop being democratic. This is a business. They reallocated and they added 30-40% more revenue within 12 months just by who took the consult. That's what I talk about future-proofing, tracking your data, and then making sense of it and listening to the story.
And leveraging your strengths, right? I mean, seeing that and understanding how to get ahead because of the data, what it tells you is incredibly important. So I know that you guys, your company, and you have worked with over 20,000 law firms and have helped many, many law firms grow into 7- and 8-figure businesses. So what are the key things about running a law firm like a business that helps a law firm accelerate their growth?
That is such a great question. You put it in a room full of people that work in the legal space and you'd have 1,500 different answers to that. So without saying, well, you take step 1, then step 2, then step 3, and hey, then buy this step-by-step process. I think I approach it a little differently. So what I look at is next year will be 25 years in business that we've been only working with law firms. We've kind of divided up law firms, I don't care what your practice area is, into kind of 4 growth phases or 4 phases. And I think that's really the appropriate way to kind of classify, because at each phase to get to the next, there's certain things you as a business owner and you as your company need to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one's job. That's a J-O-B, right? Here's the deal. Here's the definition. You go on vacation for 2 weeks. 3 weeks. Who wants to do that? I'm raising both my hands. Love it. Love to travel. Go on vacation for 3 weeks. When you came back, would you have more money? Would you have any clients? Or would the clients you do have be pissed off? If you could answer right? You can't positively answer all of those, then you have a job. You stop working, you stop getting paid. So in order to get to the next, that phase, it's all about the hustle, right? Next person in the door, got to get them in, get them signed up, because then you've got to get to the next level. You've got to hustle and make some cash flow. The next level is what we call kind of a law firm practice, right? You've got a couple more staff members. You can allocate some things, right? But this phase is the owner. The only way you're going to grow out of this practice phase is to manage the cash flow. Like, you have to know what your cash flow is. You have to price your services. You have to be good on collections. You've got to manage your cash flow because now you got payroll. And honestly, too many attorneys never get out of this practice phase because it's more expensive. You're usually taking home less money than when you had a JOB because you don't want to drive that Toyota anymore. You have a Lexus or Maserati, right? You got an A-class building space, or maybe you upgraded from Microsoft Teams to Zoom, right? I don't know, whatever the modern, because the people think you're successful. You got some more staff. You got to pay them. You're taking home less money. This one, you've got to focus on the cash flow, or you will never get out of running on this hamster wheel that we call a practice. You just can't. You've got to know what your cash, and I got to, here's, Jason, you should be looking at your cash flow weekly. I have clients that were bankruptcy clients, especially. They look at it daily, right? You need to be looking at your cash flow weekly. What's going out? What's coming in? What's owed to us? It's simple. P&L. Get there. Understand your cash flow. Don't overhire. Cut where you can, right? Be efficient. You're still a little bit of hustling. Then to get to the next phase is a business. That's where you truly have a business. And what do I mean by that? You've got, like what at Rainmaker, we call it a leadership team. You've got a department head for each department. Even if there's only one person in that department, there could be two. Usually you can't get to this phase unless you're about $1.5 million in revenue and above. You need to have somebody in charge of your intake. And if there's only one intake person, they're in charge. They're the intake manager, right? You got a paralegal manager. If you got three, two assistants, right? Then you've got to have an attorney manager over everybody who takes the consults, because who's going to keep them accountable for their sales numbers? So you have a department head at each one of these in charge of it, and then you put them responsible for their work. And this, at this phase of the business, when you're over about $1 million, you've got to focus on the data, not your P&L, just cash flow, appointment set rates, hire rates, how much I'm spending for this marketing source, and how many clients' revenue am I generating, right? Those type of numbers. So at the business phase, it's really about reporting and analyzing the numbers, because you've got department heads you hold accountable. And you meet with them at least once a week, keep them accountable for their numbers. And then guess what happens? What gets measured, managed, right? When you keep them accountable for their numbers, and they're piss poor numbers. You're closing at 14%. What's going on? We're spending $900 to or $600 to get a high quality lead. And you're only closing at 14%. If you don't know 14% your close number, then you can't hold them accountable. And you won't get it to 55% or 70% or 80%. And you should be at 80%. Because they got something serious going on in their life. They're not shopping for a vacation or a mattress. You should be closing a lot of the leads that call your firm. But at the business phase, you got these department heads. Even if you got 5-8 employees in your company, you need department heads. And then it's the reporting I was telling you about. Then it's about the sales, right? Not so much the cash flow. It's important. You got to keep your eye on it. But you have to be selling. So a lot of attorneys at this phase, they start moving more into taking the consults and handing the work off. Oh, I can't do that. Or, right? No, that's absolutely possible. And that's how any firm that gets to the business phase or above, that's what you have to do. Then the final one's lifestyle, what we call lifestyle law firm. That's where you pick and choose. you're really managing just this leadership team because you got more staff now. You've got the sales process down, your intake, your paralegals, your consults are closing at a high rate. You're just holding them accountable and you cherry pick if you wanted to work any cases. And you're handling the sales and you're running a business, but that's where you go take a month off and go to Europe, right? Or Barcelona, that's a great place. I was just there last summer. Just to go there and not worry about taking a phone call. But if you don't have those processes in place at each stage and focus like on the cash flow at the practice, looking at your numbers and then selling, and that's sell is not a four-letter word. You have to sell or you'll have a job, right? So there's some really interesting things to move to each phase. So instead of saying, well, you need to be doing $8,000 in Google local service ads every month, and be doing video marketing or whatever it may be, I think understanding those phases of a law firm and growth and how to get to the next, I think that's critical.
So I saw that you had made, kind of this pitch that being an attorney isn't the best use of a law firm owner's time. Instead, focusing on operating a law firm like a business is what's most important. It encapsulates everything you just said. And I also heard you say that the way you use the term rainmaker actually means for an attorney being a business owner, being an entrepreneur who's growing the firm like a business. And it was interesting to me in tying it back to something that we talk to law firms about, which is utilization. How much of their attorney time or paralegal time is spent doing what is an administrative task, which is something that we're experts in, which is lien resolution. That savings, we can demonstrate to a law firm pretty easily what that equates to if they give us a couple pieces of information. For example, a firm that we work with, it translated into about $500,000 in savings. So imagine being able to put $500,000 more dollars towards marketing or to what in your pocket, whatever it might be. But I'm curious about your...
Most of that should go in the owner's pocket.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious about your take about just because we've been talking sort of all around this idea of how to run a law firm as efficiently and profitably as you can as a business instead of as a law practice.
Yeah, that's really the whole nub of it all, right? Stop being an attorney and start being a business owner if that's your goal. If you want to, keep it small, keep it all, right? That's okay. That's a goal. But if you want to progress through these things, and when I was talking about, remember, I talked about the job, the practice, the business and lifestyle, kind of those four phases. When you're at the business level, when you're doing $1.5 million in revenue and under, like I've seen firms that are $10 million in annual revenue that are running it like a job. I kid you not. Right. And you're probably like, yeah, I know this one. Right. So when you're at that business level, after you've gone through the practice level, you've got some teams, you're starting to put department heads. I mentioned a couple things about reporting and analyzing the numbers. Right. The other thing that goes hand in hand with that is delegate and get the hell out of the way and hold them accountable to numbers. So, Jason, when you're looking at numbers, you're not just looking at certain activities or practice management software numbers or intake software numbers. When you see what your COGS are, your cost of goods sold, like how much does it cost for me to deliver this? Because if I can cut that by 30%, that's money in my pocket. Have you ever looked at how you are delivering your services, right? And when you do that, oh my gosh, you find people or organizations that are better and more efficient at this, and that's what they do, and they're experts at it. And then what? You delegate and get the hell out of the way. Because if you can't, even Steve Jobs needed an assistant in vendors. Bill Gates, when he was building Microsoft, had partners that were doing things for, like, you can't do this on your own. And when I say this leadership team, you better have somebody in charge of your vendors. And what I mean by that is evaluating what your costs are to deliver these services and then finding a cheaper way to do it so those individual people can focus on higher billable or higher ROI type activities. Like, do you want to have a bunch of VAs or would you rather have experts at what they do and they can deliver on it and it's seamless in your company? Oh my gosh, having people like your firm, Jason, to help after they've, you know, completed the case and done the work, there's still more work to be done. And then being able to offload that so it's done quick, predictably, accurate, and easy. And then that's another thing as a business owner, you check off your box. And you're like, okay, I'm done. That's fixed now, right?
Yeah.
It's no brainer.
And
we have companies that do that all the time.
And really,
for us, Rainmaker.
Yeah, I mean, every business, right? I mean, you got to be looking for those opportunities to accelerate your business by letting experts who are better at certain things do those things for you, especially, you know, when it is at no cost to a law firm like our services, because it's actually a client cost. And today they don't charge it as a client cost. The law firm's doing it. They're just eating it.
Oh, that's nuts. That's even more beneficial. Especially when then you, because when I talked earlier about a customer journey, you want referrals, you want repeat business. There's a certain income and demographic a lot in the trial industry when it comes to like auto accidents, right? You want the word to spread. You want more. Then you understand their customer. You want the 5-star Google reviews. You want the repeat business. You think about their entire journey. That includes all the way till when they don't ever have to talk to you about this matter again, and it's settled and paid and finished and completed. What does it look like on the back end? You're like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. Or I'll put a paralegal in charge of that, or we'll just do that this way, like we've always done it this way, as they continue to, you know, pay double, triple, quadruple. Well, you can't do that for zero. But, you know, it's those are the vendors. Like I said, some of the platforms that we offer our law firm clients, they're built on the backs of fantastic vendors that can do it better than we can. And then our clients have a better experience. And then that's a selling point too, right? You should be saying, we do this all the time with certain practice areas, like bankruptcy attorneys, not the second time I mentioned them today, but they're very famous for doing like 720 credit repair, things like this, right? It keeps them continually working with them to, with that client post-hire that they hand off to someone else, and it manages them and keeps them and it increases the client journey satisfaction. That's how businesses continue to grow.
So you do have this background in tech and law firm marketing. How do you see the intersection of those in the coming years producing either opportunities or challenges that law firms might face? You know, I've seen a lot of discussion about ChatGPT. I know I've been using it to really accelerate some of the things I do, but just advances in what's going on from a technology standpoint and tying that together with marketing, what do you think is really going to be the opportunity or the challenge?
Well, I think right now the hot thing is large language model or ChatGPT or Bard, or there's a couple other popular flavors, but not quite as much that gets coverage as them. I think attorneys right now are overvaluing AI for like right now in their law firm. And they're way underestimating what it's going to be in 3, 4, 5 years. Right. Absolutely. I think that there's a lot of software companies out there looking to leverage this for quicker automated communication with clients. I think one, let me just state this. I work a lot in the marketing realm. If you're using this for marketing, good luck, because it's grabbing information that is already out there that everybody else is regurgitating. Yeah, so good luck. I love it. In fact, there's ways that are looking to be able to detect that. And that's why it's even more important to stand out with your own custom content. If you're using it to write nurturing emails for people that are in your funnel that haven't hired your firm yet, that are on the fence, fantastic. Newsletter, fantastic. things like that. The other things, wait a couple more minutes. You know, ultimately, automation is key. We've been working with clients in the space for automation for 10, 12 years, 15 years, starting with just basic email. Automation is the best technology for the small business owner. When I say small business owner, I would say 50 employees and under. And if you get real specific, a lot under the 10, 15 employee size. Really depends on where you're at, right? As long as you're not running it like a job, okay? Just don't do that. But for them, automation is key because it will do things repeatable that your staff or you won't do. And it helps you allocate them to, one, not have to maybe hire as many staff, and then reallocate to the better use of their time. Just like you know, your service. I think that's going to be the biggest push because that's the practical push, right? That's something you can go do today. Like just, and what I say is look at go to every one of your department heads. If you don't have them yet, that's okay. But say, okay, let's lay out what your staff does day to day. What can we automate? And then if you absolutely can automate it, then you say, okay, we're going to spend the next 6 months on how to retool that process so we can automate it, right? As much as you possibly can. That does not take ChatGPT. That takes probably leveraging the software you currently have. Or maybe a new one, but nothing crazy. That by far, I think, is the most practical advice for right now. And for the next, if you don't have automation, until you actually do it. It could be 100 years from now, right? Automation is key for that. Where I see legal tech, I'm going to just do a video because today I was reading clickbait and I heard about it last year. Oregon just passed the rule for their Supreme Court that you do not have to pass the bar to be an attorney. And I wonder how many states accept Oregon's law license. Okay. I imagine Arizona probably would, right? I don't know, Jason. I'm not an attorney. And in my state of Arizona, you don't have to be an attorney to own a law firm. You see where I'm going with this? Yeah. One of my friends, Chris Anderson, I've known him for a long time. He's an attorney and he used to work in the space, but he's going around rolling up small law firms across the country. Just like financial planners are doing and accountants do, for those ones, the 50, 60, 60 year old, 65, they're done grinding because unfortunately they never got out of the job or the practice phase and they're burnt, they're done. They've got no exit plan. They're rolling them up. That's what he's doing to combat this type of competition that's going to be in the midterm. You're going to see bigger firms. You think it's just going to be Morgan & Morgan. I'm thinking it's going to be Walmart. They do it in Canada. Why can't they do it here? Right? I think that's, but really the biggest threat, I think, I don't know how we got on the topic of threat, but technology's threat and opportunity. The biggest threat, I think, is those young, hungry people, especially the ones now they're going to flock to Oregon, go through their alternate testing method, and they come out of law school, they hang their shingle, they get their license and they hang their shingle the same day because they went to law school to be a business owner. They don't have any preconceived notions about, oh, law firm. Yeah. Hold on. Let me get back to you 3 days later. They have none of they know a customer journey. They know a buying experience. But I think using ChatGPT is some fun things that you can do to help increase some of your nurturing and some of your outreach, not on your web, not with that type of marketing. I think too many people are overblowing it, but automation, anything you can automate, like autoresponders, text messages, emails, Zapier is a software that make other softwares talk to each other. Just like start trying to move data, then automate it, because that's like an employee that just works all the time and never asks for a raise. The good kind, right?
Absolutely. So last question before we wrap up. So your company specializes in lead gen, conversion, client retention, and marketing strategies around all of that. Could you share some effective strategies that small to mid-sized personal injury law firms can implement to improve their rates in the acquisition as well as retention of clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Like our goal here at Rainmaker is to write grow law firms. We do that by helping them attract and then convert them into clients. But the attraction part, right? That's always the hottest topic because it's the most expensive topic and it can be the most confusing topic. And it can be the most unknown if you're not looking at your numbers. I'm not talking clicks or impressions. I'm talking real phone calls and appointments, those numbers. A couple things. One, you've got to get some Google reviews, right? Even if you have to ask your IT vendor, your Aunt Sally, your phone vendor, your insurance salesman, if you're just hanging your shingle, your landlord, every client, if you worked with them 20 years ago when you were a public defender, and I'm just get some reviews. And if you don't know how many, look at your competitors. You need to start competing. So be smart and be really, I guess, really make it a point. You've got to get reviews. Have to. And don't just say, I'm going to. How are you going to do that? That would be my next question. Okay, here's how I'm going to do it. Right. And then if you're looking for non-organic marketing, I would say paid, which is the opposite, right? Obviously. Local service ads by Google. Max it out as much as you can. That's your best pay per phone call marketing. It's not pay per click. It's different. It's pay per phone call. Max that out. You won't be able to spend more than $3,000 to $5,000 a month with it. It's not crazy difficult to set it up and run it like pay per click or social media. Go there, right? The next thing is DIY video, right? You really should be shooting video. And if you don't know how to create video, you've got to learn. And that's one of the things that I wanted to share a little bit today. And I know we need a topic for it. Maybe it's a topic for another time. But you've got to be able to create these because it's not an art. It's a science. There's a process. And you should be able to create video with this, with kind of like this, a layout of here's how you do it. And then what you take these videos, when I say videos, I'm talking about long form videos, which are 5 to 8 minutes on YouTube, shot horizontally with your cell phone. That's your equipment and a tripod, right? And your script that you have written down that you keep looking and, right, and never hit stop and let your editors take it out. That's my quick instruction there. But when you're creating these, then omni-channel it. Take that video, that 5 to 8 minute YouTube video, transcribe it into a blog, transcribe it. Use Google Translate or another AI tool like Jasper AI. That's another AI tool to use. And then that's a blog. Then put some keywords in it and post it on your web. And then you take that long form video and you slice it into 3 to 6 short forms, like those ones that you see on Reels and TikTok and Instagram that everybody's watching. By the way, we just had a client 2 days ago. He's a family attorney in Orange County, California. He put out a video about Harry and Meghan are going to get divorced in California. A family attorney breaks it down. You have 46,000 views in less than 24 hours. Why? I have people watch this stuff. He got twice that on his short reel. I don't know, right? I'm just saying reels and shorts and TikToks right now, crazy. Not going to make your phone ring, but it's going to brand it. But you take this one long form video, you turn it into a blog, you turn it into short forms, you turn it into your newsletter. Then you post a short on Monday, a long form on Tuesday, your blog on Thursday, another short on Friday, another short on Sunday. And you find every platform. If you don't have TikTok, open one up. If you don't have Instagram, do the same. Tweet it as well, right? Every platform you can think about, figure out how you can take this long form video, repurpose it to everywhere. And if you can get that process, it may take you a month or two to plan it out, to learn how each platform, what they take in the process to upload it and configure that. If you can do that, then by you creating like 3 videos a month with a process that only takes you about 20 minutes a video, if you can do that, all your organic marketing is taken care of. Then you run in your local service ads. And then when you want to get the next level, you take those shorts and then you turn them into Facebook social ads. More difficult for personal injury because that's all about branding. It's hard to target on social media for ads for PI. Don't let anybody sell you. You're going to 10X your firm on TikTok. It just won't happen. But here's the key. Stop creating content just for one platform, like a short. Create one and then repurpose it everywhere. And then some are going to work. Some will fail miserably, but it's the tortoise and the hare. Who won? That's what I got.
So for anyone watching today, if they'd like to learn more or get more information about what you guys do, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yep. Our direct number is 844-RAINMAKER. But I also have a download that I wanted to share, because I think with those videos, you've got to start with your YouTube. That's not going to be your biggest ROI with your videos. Don't let anybody tell you it will, because it won't. But you have to put them there, and then you go everywhere else. So your first step is understanding that. So we've got a download of how to optimize and set up your YouTube channel. Even if you already had one for 10 years, get it, follow the step-by-step, just do it. And that's at therainmakerinstitute.com/trial lawyer view. And hopefully you'll put that out there as well. But I would love to, if you want to give us a call at 844-RAINMAKER, I would love to strategize with you on any of these topics, how to measure your numbers and when you're in the business phase and the cash flow, or talk about how to automate. These are the things that just really make sense to business owners. And unfortunately, a lot of law firms overlook them. And it's really impactful, and it gets you out of getting burnt out. So I'm going to share that.
We'll share that link and your contact information in the show notes. Everybody can get to that easily from today's episode. Well, thanks, Philip, for joining me. Great speaking with you, and look forward to perhaps having you on a future webinar to kind of go more deep dive into some of the stuff that you were talking about today.
Yeah, I'd love to. It's good stuff. It's life-changing stuff. So thanks a lot, Jason. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you for tuning in to Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoyed today's discussion and encourage you to tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights about your practice. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Visit synergysettlements.com to learn more about how we allow trial lawyers to focus on what they do best.